Have you tried buying or selling a house recently? The housing market has been all over the place since the pandemic started back in 2020. Today, we're bringing on an expert to help navigate those murky waters onto the Mach 1 Market Moment.
Welcome to the Mach 1 Market Moment, where we provide financial information on topics such as investing, insurance, financial planning, and everything related to your money. A quick reminder that the hosts of the show are employees of Mach 1 Financial Group. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and nothing said in the show should be taken as investment advice. Employees and clients of Mach 1 Financial Group may maintain positions in the securities or strategies discussed. We upload a brand new podcast every Thursday, so be sure to subscribe to our show so you never miss an episode. Also, follow us on all of our social media platforms. We are Mach 1 Financial Group on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube.
If you have a question you want us to answer here on the podcast, just send an email to podcast@mach1fg.com. If you want to learn more about your financial future, you can schedule a free consultation with any of our advisors here at Mach 1 with absolutely no obligation. Just head to mach1fg.com for more information.
Hello, welcome to episode number 95. I'm David Lee. I'm hosting today. I don't normally fill this responsibility. Mike Frost is usually doing this, but happy to be hosting today. And we've got Eli Freeman with us today, joining me on the podcast. Welcome, Eli.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. And our special guest today, Rob Winkle. Rob is one of the top performing, top producing real estate agents here in Northwest Arkansas, and the top 3% of all real estate agents in Northwest Arkansas. He's a broker and realtor with Fathom Realty. And he's going to be here with us today to talk about how to navigate this this crazy housing market we're in, right? Right,
yep.
Rob?
Yep. It's good to be here. Thanks,
welcome
David.
Today's podcast. We're glad you could join us on for such a timely and important topic, given what's happening today in the market. So with that as an introduction, let's dive right in here, Rob. So a lot of our clients, and a lot of just people in general, most of our clients here at Mach 1 are people who are seniors, retirees, and near retirees is how I'd kind of describe them. And so in that demographic group, what we see a lot of times is people looking to maybe downsize, right? Maybe their kids are all grown and gone, and they're looking to downsize and maybe have a little bit more efficient house size for them, being an empty nester. Obviously, there's a lot of people listening that might be on the opposite end of that, looking to maybe they're starting a family and trying to upsize. So as people listening, whatever their situation may be, do you have some advice that you can give people for how to right size, so to speak? How do you right size your home in what we all know to be a seller's market right now?
That's a great question, David. And I would tell you that the challenge in this market is primarily with inventory. And the challenge that people face is, I could sell my house today, but I'm not in 30 days going to find and close on the
right
house that I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And that's the big rock that you got to move and figure out.
Or less than 30 days a lot of times, right?
or less than 30 days.
Yeah.
And I'm in the process of doing this myself. My wife and I just last Tuesday closed on our forever home that we're buying, or we bought last week. And we actually put it under contract, and we waited almost 3 to 4 weeks before we put our existing home on the market, because we wanted, after 22 years of being in the same home, we wanted to have a month to move out of our house.
Yeah.
But Rob, you were telling me before the podcast, how long did you search for that, your forever home?
Yeah. So we were in a position where we were in a paid for house, and we didn't have to move. And we had some really specific things that we wanted in a house. And namely, one of the biggest things was we wanted to have a house that was still large enough for our kids to feel like they could come home and want to be home and enjoy a great home space. So that was very paramount to us. And then we get into gardening and stuff like that. So we wanted, you know, some people might want a smaller yard as they get older. We're going the other way, and we're going to try a bigger yard. So we've almost doubled our yard from like a 0.25 acres to like 0.56 is, I think, what our new property is. So,
yeah.
But again, it's kind of back to what do you like to do in retirement, and you know, what kind of things are you going to do? Some people may, their forever home is more geared towards being near golf courses or near lakes, or, you know, other things like that, because those are where they want to be.
Mm-hmm. So you would say, for your first step of trying to move or downsize or upsize, it would just be really get into the criteria that is important to you, the things that are non-negotiables for you, and then the rest of it be a little bit more flexible on.
Yeah, absolutely. Try to not waste time looking at houses that you know don't have the things you're looking for. If it, you know, the location isn't right or if the size isn't right. You know, we also wanted a pretty turnkey house where we'd never lived in a new house. We're moving out of a 32-year-old house, and we purchased a 2-year-old house, and it's the closest thing we've ever been to living in a new home.
Yeah. So you mentioned something earlier that I want to expound upon a little earlier. You kind of did the process almost the opposite of how a lot of people are doing it now, right? It's such a fast-moving seller's market that people are putting their homes on the market and just within days, literally, right, Rob? I mean, houses are selling, but you did it in the reverse of that, right? You first went through the steps that Eli talked about where you clearly identified what criteria you wanted your forever house to meet, and then you searched for that house and you bought it before putting your home on the market, right?
That's correct.
And yep. What are the advantage? Why did you do it that way?
Yeah. So the first thing that I would tell you is in this market, most sellers are getting multiple offers in the first 24 to 48 hours of putting their house on the market. And myself included, most agents are actually delaying the sale of a house to get more buyers in it to let the market dictate what the price of the house should be. And what I did to set ourselves up was I talked to a lender and got I got an in-house loan with my bank, whereby I essentially pulled out the equity of, or I pulled out about 75% of the equity of the house I'm living in, so that we had the cash funds to be able to be a cash buyer. And that was a really important step, because not all offers are the same. And when a seller is looking at the different offers that are coming in, one of the first things they're asking is, how is it being financed?
Yeah.
And cash offers always stand out, because the sellers know that there's, and the agents know also, that there's fewer hurdles with getting from contract to closing.
Yeah.
Namely, I don't have an appraisal. I don't have to worry about underwriting. I don't have to worry about something.
Someone getting approved for a loan or declined for a loan.
I don't have to worry about something changing in the process. So doing it this way allowed me to strengthen my position as a cash buyer, so that I could stand out against other buyers that were maybe competing and not cash offers.
Yeah, and that makes a ton of sense to me in this market, right? Because you know you're not going to have a problem selling your current home, right? So you could...
Correct.
You want to speak to that? I mean, how fast are we seeing homes moving?
Yeah, right, so So my home, I tried to... I'm a conservative guy by nature, and I went into it with an open look at where I thought I'd sell my house. And that kind of helped me with understanding where I'd come out. And interestingly enough, I wound up listing my house. We listed it on a Thursday. We actually checked into an Airbnb the family did over the weekend, so that we didn't have any obstructions to showing. We get it ready for showing and just let it show all weekend. Yeah. And we wound up Monday with two offers. It wound up selling about $20,000 over what I had conservatively estimated. So we came out of our existing house really well.
Yeah. And it took I might have missed the timeline there, from the time you listed it to the time you had a contract on it was
about
how long?
72 hours.
72 hours.
But we put it out there so that we were reviewing offers at that point, could have had offers right away.
Yeah.
And that's kind of part of the secret to helping sellers get top dollar for their property, is put it on the market for a couple of days and take offers, as opposed to just fielding offers as they come in.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I follow you on that. Can you expound on what you mean by that a little bit more?
Yeah, so in this market right now, if I put a house on the market at market value, at what the comps support, and I activate that house, I could have a showing 2 hours later and somebody write an offer that has a short expiration I got to respond to by 2 o'clock today. And I'm, you know, yeah, that's what I was asking for. But if you let it percolate on the market and, you know, you start communicating to the buyer's agents that are showing your house and say, yeah, I've got one offer, I've got two offers, I've got three offers. It starts telling people asking price was a suggestion.
Yeah.
And it helps that seller with maximizing their investment on the backside.
Yeah. So I assume that's something that the real estate agent, if you're looking to sell your home, that's something that the real estate agent would coordinate for you, right?
Exactly.
You'd write into the, I guess, into the contract somehow that you're going to collect offers over the weekend or over a certain period of time.
We're going to review them on Sunday evening.
We're not going to review, we're not going to review any short-term expiring offers, right? Yeah, makes sense.
So really what you're doing with the strategy that you've implemented is using the crazy market that we're in to your advantage.
Yes.
Because you have made it to where you're taking the cash out. You have 36 months, is that right, on the
36-month interest rate. And I didn't take that money out until the morning of closing. So it's not like I was sitting on that money in the bank. I had the line of credit so that I could do that. And the 25th of May, that's the first place I'm going, is I'm paying that thing off.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to pay, a few $100 interest for that month. But it gave us a lot of peace of mind, because the other really painful alternative to that right sizing of your home is I sell and I have to move into a rental for a year or 6 months or whatever, and I've got to move twice, and nobody wants to move twice.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, because you're almost using the velocity of the market right now to your advantage.
That's
to
right.
Where you go out and know that you can buy with cash, but you know that your house is going to sell just as rapidly. So then you can have the peace of mind that you're taking out a loan before selling your property, but knowing, hey, I have a good property, it's going to close within 40 to 60 days, and I'll be able to pay off that loan and not have strong interest to pay. So a really creative strategy.
Correct.
Yeah.
And most people my age, Eli, don't want a mortgage. And, at 57 years old, I don't want to go into the title company and sign up for a 30-year mortgage. I think most people feel that way that are at or nearing retirement.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about some of the concerns that people may have in this market, because like Eli just hit upon, the velocity of the market can be both a pro and a con, I guess, depending on how you're approaching it. So for people who say, well, I don't want to buy in a seller's market, what would your advice be to them?
So if you're downsizing, I think the thing you have to understand is, maybe I don't want to buy in a seller's market, but if I'm going to buy 2,500 square feet and I'm selling 3,000 square feet, my net at the end of this is I've got 500 less square feet of house, and at $175 a square foot, you could potentially trade houses and get in a house that more readily suits your needs. And you're putting a chunk of money in your pocket.
Yeah.
And then as you do that, and a lot of times your house, a smaller house, is less maintenance. I'm going from a 30-year-old house with a couple of aged HVAC systems to a maintenance-free exterior home with one HVAC system that's 2 years old. And just the maintenance factor alone on the house is a really, really attractive thing for me in our new home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there any way, so you had a house that was paid for. If someone doesn't have a house that's paid for, are there any other options for them to do kind of similar to what you're doing?
Well, sure. I mean, depending upon, where they're at and how much the bank is willing to loan them. You could have a house maybe that you bought 10 or 15 years ago. A lot of people here, 2-3 years ago, they bought a house, and the value of that house is up over $100,000 in 2 years or even 1 year, depending upon the house. But what they can still do is they can still do a home equity line of credit on the appreciation. What the bank will do is they'll go out and do an appraisal on that home, and that will help determine how much cash they'll let them pull out on it. But where it gets a little tricky is if they've got a home that's not paid off, they still have a mortgage payment. And the question is, do they have the financial means and the kind of ratios for debt to income where the lender will let them purchase another home?
Yeah, having two mortgages simultaneously, the bank going to, are you going to qualify for both of those mortgages at the same time? Because you're going to have an overlap period.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so just to kind of recap that before we talk about a couple other things. So, and Rob, you correct me if I miss any steps here, but what I heard you say is number one, first step would be identify your ideal property. Second step would be talk to your bank and get approved for a HELOC or some, I guess a HELOC, right, Rob? Get approved for that HELOC so that you become the cash buyer that's needed in this fast-moving market. Then third would be buy the property with your cash from the HELOC. Then fourth would be list the new property once the, or list the old property once the new property is secured.
Yeah, those are the main steps. The other thing that I would put really far back up at the beginning of this is meet with,
I was going to ask you that.
Meet with your agent or broker so that you can discuss the situation, so that they can do a comparative market analysis on your house.
Okay.
They can help you understand what your house is going to bring on the market. They can do a seller's net sheet that says, hey, if you sell for this, here's what you'll walk out of the title company with. And it gives you just a lot more peace of mind with knowing what the value of and what you're going to walk out of the market with the one that you're selling. And when I do that with people, I like to try to give them a little bit of a conservative view on something like that, so that I'm not giving them a pie in the sky. I'd like them to have an upside surprise rather than, I'd rather under promise and over deliver. And that's what, I mean, I've had houses sell for $40,000-$50,000 over list price this year.
Yeah.
And even a couple weeks ago, I listed one that the seller wanted to list it about $25,000 higher than I recommended. And I questioned whether or not we would even get any offers. And we wound up getting three offers and we got it sold. And we did go a little bit over list, but had he listed 10 or 20,000 less, he probably would have potentially even gotten more offers and had more to choose from. And he didn't get a cash offer. So now we're in that process of escrow from closing or contract to closing where, the loan and the appraisal and all that stuff have to come back, and a cash offer maybe could have made it a little easier for them going through the rest of the process.
All right. So thanks for that, Rob. Great information on how to right size in the seller's market. Eli, I'm going to toss it to you to talk about the last topic here.
So Rob, for the listeners that listen to this podcast, they know that I just recently closed on a house. We looked at 20 plus properties. We offered on 10 plus properties before we were able to close. Do you have any tips for people buying in this seller's market?
I do. I just hope none of my competitive realtors are listening. And I would tell you, Eli, that not all offers are the same. And when you've done this long enough, you get to the point where you know the different levers that are completed within an offer. There's a lot of elements of an offer. And just a couple weeks ago, I wrote three offers in 1 week, and I had two of those accepted. And I've talked to agents that have written 25 offers and only had two accepted this year. And some of the things that I talk through with my clients when we're making an offer are, number one, offering what we call a non-refundable deposit. And that's a little bit of a gutsy move for a buyer, because it is truly non-refundable. Okay. But I write that so that they don't have to surrender that non-refundable deposit until they've had a chance to inspect the property and be good with the property, negotiate repairs if they're negotiating repairs on it. But a non-refundable deposit, when I have 12 offers sitting in front of me as a seller, the agents are going to call out, hey, this person's willing to put some skin in the game and walk away and lose some money if they don't close for some reason. Some people think of earnest money as a non-refundable deposit. It isn't. It's old school real estate. And with earnest money, if somebody doesn't close on the property, they get their earnest money back. So it doesn't have any teeth, so to speak. Another thing that I've had some people write into their offers is a commitment of no repairs. And that commitment isn't, hey, we're not going to inspect it. That commitment is, we're not going to nickel and dime you on repairs. We still have the right to inspect and the right to know what we're buying and kick all the tires on it, but we've committed we're not going to ask for repairs. And that's been, buyers or sellers love that, because they know that on their way out, they're not going to be coordinating with a handyman and a plumber and an electrician. They just you know that they're going
to
get
no house is perfect, right? So, I mean, you're going to have those issues. Correct. So, yeah, I could see how from the seller's perspective that would be.
And then the other thing that we'll write into these offers, if the buyer has the financial ability to do it, we'll write in there an appraisal gap. And what an appraisal gap looks like is maybe a house is listed for $325,000 and you're offering $350,000. And so you're offering $25,000 over their ask price. And along with that, you say either, buyer agrees to make up any shortfall up to $25,000 on the appraisal, or you can just write a price guarantee into it that the buyer guarantees their purchase price.
Regardless of the appraisal.
Yeah. And when you do that, and when I do that with my buyers, you know, the typical thing is submit offers with lender pre-qualification and or proof of funds if it's a cash offer.
Yeah.
What I do when somebody's making an appraisal gap guarantee or a price guarantee, I get with that client ahead of time and say, hey, we need your lender pre-qualification, and then we also need a screenshot of a bank account that shows you've got the means to make up 20. You got enough for 5% down payment, $5,000 in closing costs, and if you're going to write a $25,000 appraisal gap, that you've got $40,000 in the bank, so to speak, to put that on the table, so that you know that seller's agent can take that to the seller and say, not only did they give me the proof of funds or the pre-qualification, but they also gave me the proof of funds showing that they have the financial ability to make up that shortfall.
Yeah, that's good. Any other closing thoughts or tips before we wrap it up today?
No, none right off okay. off the top of my head here.
That was really good. Let me re-summarize what you just said there. And Eli, I'll also toss it to you here to make sure we don't forget anything. But you said offer non-refundable deposit after you've had a chance to inspect the house, make a commitment of no repairs, and write something into the offer regarding an appraisal gap. That's good. Good advice for how to make a competitive offer in this strong seller's market that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
Eli?
And just to conclude this podcast, so Rob, what's the best way that people can reach out to you if they do want to use you or like what you've been talking about and want to ask questions to you? And I think you have the thought of the day. So
I do.
If you'll finish us out with that, how can they reach you?
So they can contact me by text or phone call direct. I pick my phone up, 479-366-5017. The thought of the day, or what is it? The moment of the day.
Yeah, the thought of the day.
Thought of the
That's
day.
What we always thought call of the day. And I like this one that I use when people ask me about purchasing raw land. And what I tell them is I say, don't wait to buy land. Buy land and wait.
Yeah.
And, good. You know, the truth of it is they're not making more land, and the population keeps growing, and land just continues to become more and more valuable.
Absolutely. Especially if what they say about Northwest Arkansas, the projected growth rates here
incredible.
Come true. I mean, yeah, you're going to end up doing good if you buy land and wait, like you said. So that's a good way to close it out. Thanks again, Rob, for being our guest here today. Really appreciated the information. I know our listeners will appreciate and value the information. So thank you again for being here. And thank you all of you who are listening out there. And we will look forward to talking to you again next time on the next Mach 1 Market Moment.
Mach 1 Financial Group, Inc., Mach 1, is an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Bentonville, Arkansas. Mach 1 may only transact business in those states in which it maintains a notice filing or qualifies for an exemption or exclusion from registration requirements. SEC registration does not constitute an endorsement of the firm by the commission, nor does it indicate that the advisor has attained a particular skill level or ability. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. All investment strategies have the potential for profit or loss. The information presented is the sole opinion of the speaker and is not meant to be investment advice. Mach 1 does not provide tax or legal advice. You should speak with your tax or legal advisor regarding your specific situation. For full disclosures, please visit www.mach-1financial.com/disclosures.